So I think the benefits outweigh the costs, and I don't think we're anyone is expecting people just to give up their cars. I think that in all over the country and all over the world, people value the the ability to travel. We're anticipating that that would continue to be probably the major way that people move.
That's from a story from WOSU reporter Mandy Trimble. She asked, what if 78,000 Central Ohio motorists stop driving for good? And you might be surprised to learn that the person you just heard speaking, that's Bob Lawler. He's the brains behind the MORPC's, the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission's, push tomorrow for National Car-Free Day. So what's the point if it doesn't make that much difference? If 10% of the roughly 788,000 people who commute each day quit using their cars, and it doesn't make any difference, why shoot for a car-free day that most likely will inspire many fewer than that? Joining us today to talk about the movement to celebrate Car-Free Day in Central Ohio and beyond, Chester Jordan, Executive Director of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Welcome to the show, Chester.
Hey, Ann.
Also, Jeff Stevens, he's Executive Director of Consider Biking. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And Marty Stutz. Marty is Vice President of Communications, Marketing, and Customer Service for COTA. Welcome to the show, Marty.
Thank you, Ann. Hi.
Question for the listeners. Are you going car-free on Thursday? Why or why not? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Are you going car-free on Thursday? Why or why not? We want to hear from you. Chester, Jordan, and Stephen, Marty, what's on our roads today? How many cars, how many bikes, how many people? What's the matrix at this point?
Well, obviously, as Bob had said, that far and away, the way we get folks around is, and our transportation system is via motor vehicle. It's critically important to our success is the economy. It's critically important to our success about the movement of our transportation logistics system. And it's served our country and it's served our nation very, very well. The real question for us, as we move forward, what are the transportation mix and transportation options that we're going to need to have to be able to compete in a global marketplace? It's about attracting the best and brightest, the young and the young at heart. And what are those options and systems that we're going to, what we don't have as a transportation system? We have a lot of disconnected parts. We've got to create a transportation system. At the bottom line is, in the day, it's about creating jobs and economic opportunity and providing options for folks. As you know, this year, the baby boom generation is turning 65. As we think about that, you know, we have about a third of our population that do not drive for all kinds of different reasons. If we don't have opportunities for them to be able to get to work, to play, to pray, to go to school, we are not going to be able to compete for that baby boom generation, as well as those 121,000 individuals graduating from our schools. They're just not going to stay here, Ann. They're going to go to places like Minneapolis. They're going to go places like Austin. They're going to go to Indiana. They're going to go to all our other places and not be here. At the end of the day, when it's all said and done, this is about investing in infrastructure that's going to allow us to compete in a global marketplace.
And investing in infrastructure beyond highways and bridges.
It has to be multimodal choices. So it has to be about airports. It has to be about intermodal yards. It has to be about highways. It also has to be, though, about connectivity and providing transportation options such as biking and walking. You know, what? One of the great tragedies we have, Ann, as we think about, I have a daughter that's 11 years old. They're telling us, the scientists are telling us, that generation is not going to live as long as their parents. That's for the very first time in our nation's history that that's ever happened. With obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes in our children, they're not getting out, Ann. They're not able to get out and about. We build great parks, but there's no way to get to them safely. We have a great transportation, public transit system, but, you know, weeds are knee-high, and there's no cover out there. So why would you want to ride the bus? So, again, it's about investing in our economy. Our economy is about the built environment. If we don't have the built environment, we're not going to create the jobs and economic opportunity.
Marty Stutz, a few years ago, when gas reached $5 a gallon, between four and five, what happened, and what do you think the impact of the price of gas is? I mentioned $3.50. It doesn't seem so bad now, does it?
You're right, Ann. In 2008, when gas did spike to $4, we saw a huge increase in our ridership, 10% in 2008. So clearly, people respond to high fuel prices, and they will look for options. Fortunately for us, when gas did start to come back and retreat a little bit, we kept a lot of those riders. And we're seeing even now our ridership continues to grow, and we are up 9% so far here in 2011 over the same period last year. So we think that if we continue to expand our system, provide a viable option for people, and make transit attractive, just like Chester says, we can attract people not just to our service, but to our community. And we are very hopeful that people come to transit, find out that it works for them, they see a difference in their wallet and in their budget, and they'll continue to perhaps leave at least one of those cars at home and make transit part of their daily life.
It seems though this car-free day, and it's worldwide, it's some stuff happening all over the world. I checked the wiki page on it, and there's people, South Africa, Mexico, you name it, they're all over the place. But it still seems somewhat gimmicky. And when it's when you're at the stage of gimmick, you have to wonder how many years before it becomes something that's embraced by enough people to give you the economies of scale to do the sorts of things that Chester's talking about, that you're talking about, Marty, and Jeff Stevens, you know, the sort of things you want as a bicyclist.
Yes. We, we sort of chuckle at this a little bit because we're working, you know, to promote cycling and in riding bus and mass transit. We work on this stuff every day. You know, we don't need one car-free day. But it does bring awareness to our cause. And, we appreciate that. And, you asked earlier about the numbers. We see less than 1% of trips to work being made by bicycle here in Columbus. And, you know, the way those counts are taken, it's a little rough. But we're expecting some new counts for 2010 to come out, I think, tomorrow. So we're excited, and hopefully we'll see those go up. You know, we just look out our window, and, you know, the number of cyclists on the road is exploding. So, we're optimistic. We know there's been a lot of investment lately in, you know, the active transportation infrastructure that's going to help us here. And we know that there's political will to keep that investment up here in Columbus.
Marty?
I think what's also important to mention, these kind of days and recognitions may sound a bit gimmicky, but it's all about the message. It's reminding people that they have options, and perhaps you're not going to walk away from your automobile completely, but maybe for some instances you'll say, you know, today I don't need to take the car to the grocery. Or, for example, football Saturday coming up. There's an Ohio State game this weekend. We offer additional service throughout our system, primarily in the High Street corridor on Saturdays. And so maybe folks who would generally drive to a football game might say, today I'm going to take the bus, or I'm going to put my bike on the front of the bus, and I'm going to bike my way over to the stadium. And so I don't think it has to be an all-or-nothing decision. I think thinking about the choices we all have and trying something different here and there is the message behind a day like Car-Free Day.
We are talking about Car-Free Day. It is tomorrow, Thursday. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, Chester Jordan of MORPC, Marty Stutz from CODA, and Jeff Stevens from Consider Biking, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And we also want to know, are you going car-free on Thursday? Why or why not? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what's it going to take? You mentioned when it got up to $4+ a gallon, Marty, that your ridership increased 10%. Chester, Jordan, what do we know about when we're going to reach that critical mass?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. You know, there's an old saying out there that says it took 30 years to become an overnight sensation. You know, obviously, Marty was talking about transportation choices. If we don't invest in the infrastructure, there is no choice. I mean, it's all or nothing deal. And unfortunately, what would happen in 2008 after gas went over $4 a gallon, we had families for the very first time in our history paying more in transportation costs than they were in housing costs. That's not sustainable. That's not sustainable as a region or as an economy. And so we've got to invest in those transportation options. And for us, it's not an all or nothing kind of conversation. It is about how we create an integrated transportation system and providing options, particularly with the new baby boom generation. Just look around this room right here. We're all getting older, Ann. And so part of that is also being able to, we don't want, you know, all those 65ers to move all down to Florida. We need them to stay here. One reason they stay here is because we have to keep them in the workforce. We have no choice. because there's such a huge cohort in there. But we also have to say, how do we reconnect our communities? How do we make them more walkable? How do we make them more lifelong where you can live in your house throughout their entire life? How can we make sure their streets are complete streets? And we're providing those and investing. And for us, at the end of the day, it's all said and done. It's about economic development. It's about economic prosperity. And it's about competing in a global marketplace. But the built environment for that, the foundation for that, is that infrastructure investment. If it's not there, you can't compete.
What are we expecting in the future? What's the growth of Central Ohio supposed to be like 10, 20, 30, 50 years out?
We're very fortunate here, Ann. You know that, and particularly in the state of Ohio and to some degree in the Midwest. We are growing here in Central Ohio. We're going to add another 500,000 or so in the next 30 years. And that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. We're about 2.1 million as a region, as our 12 counties that MORPC kind of works with in Central Ohio. But at the same time, that same time frame, our competitors, if you want to think about it in those terms, the state of Texas is going to double in population. I mean, Georgia is going to add 4 million just in the Atlanta region alone. I mean, if you think about who we're trying to compete against, if we're going to attract that talent, and a lot of those folks who are moving to Texas and Georgia, where are they coming from? They're coming from Ohio.
They're coming from here, but are the people that make those predictions, are they doing it with the current metrics? Because the cost of gasoline, I mean, as it goes up, Texas isn't exactly, that's a very big state. And, right. And also the cost of energy mm-hmm. is going to skyrocket.
Right.
Living down in Texas costs a lot of money in the summer, last time I right. heard. So what do we talk, even still people are going to move down there?
One of the great assets we have, and you think about these things, we're getting a little off track, but I think it's critically
that's okay.
important. One of the great assets we have in our region is our natural resources, i.e. water. That is the greatest asset that we have. I just came from Atlanta. They're in a big fight at the U.S.
Right.
Supreme Court level over water issues.
Well, they've been in a drought for, what, 7 or 8 years?
For 7 years. Texas just went through this entire mm-hmm. issue of a drought since last October. My parents live right. That's where I grew up. I mean, we have some competitive advantages here, but we have to take advantage of them. If we don't take advantage of them, they'll pass us by, and others will step into that space. Part of that competitive advantage is creating a transportation system. We just don't have a system here, and we have some great parts, but we do not have a system. If we don't create that in a system, if we don't invest today, it won't be there tomorrow, and that's part of our challenge. We have to do it today, or we won't be able to compete.
We are talking about Car Free Day tomorrow. My guest, Chester Jordan, Executive Director of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, representing about 2.1 million people in 12 Central Ohio counties. And also Marty Stutz, COTA's Vice President of Communications, Marketing, and Customer Service. And also Jeff Stevens, Executive Director of Consider Biking. It's a bike advocacy organization in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, give us a call and let us know, are you going to celebrate Car Free Day tomorrow? Why or why not? This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Make Nationwide Arena a publicly owned property and you can save the local economy and the Blue Jackets. That's basically the proposal from the working committee that was set up to keep the Blue Jackets in the city.
And if we lost an anchor tenant, it'll be a long time before we can fill the place.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
And you can listen to 89.7 NPR News anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on Listen Now at the top of the page. Listen to local and national news from your computer or mobile device. Just visit WOSU.org. 68 degrees with cloudy skies, a chance of rain today, a high of 74. A chance of rain tonight, a low of 57 degrees. Partly sunny tomorrow, a high of 72. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about Car Free Day. It's tomorrow. You still have times to make plans for your celebration. Are you going to celebrate Car Free Day tomorrow? We're going to, later on in the program, we're going to go over some ideas for you and some things that are going to be going on around town with my guests, Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking, Marty Stutz of COTA, and also Chester Jordan of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. So give us a call. Tell us if you're going to celebrate. Why or why not? 614-292-8513 is the number. And Adam in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Wow. I love your show. Thank you so much for giving me access to this information every day.
Thank you, Adam.
And also, I really support this day. For 3 months this summer, I work on the west side, but I live on campus at OSU, and I didn't have a car. And they introduced me to riding the bus and riding my bike.
Adam, could I interrupt you for just a second? Could you hold that phone a little bit away from your mouth, maybe?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay.
But yeah, it introduced me to something that I love now. I mean, I just absolutely adore biking, and I think that no cars is a great idea, at least for a day. So I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Well, Adam, what are you going to do tomorrow?
I'm definitely riding my bike. It's only about a 45-minute ride, so
okay.
Not that bad.
All righty. Well, thanks for the call, Adam. Take care.
Thanks
for listening. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Carol in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Our family has been a one-car family since 2003. And the one thing that we struggle with in not being completely car-free is not being able to get everywhere we need to go by bus, especially in a timely manner. Like, I have to pick my son up from school, but I can't get from work to his school to get him in the time that I would need to. So I won't be going car-free tomorrow, but my husband will be.
That is an issue I wanted to bring up, Carol. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this idea that we live in families. We're not, we don't just worry about ourselves. We worry about picking our kid up from school and that sort of thing and doing it in a timely manner, you know, on our way home from work. A lot of people do that. What about that, Marty? I mean, when you look out over the panorama of plans for COTA, how do you figure that into the equation?
We hear all the time from parents who would love to take the bus to and from work every day. They have concerns about the child at school, child at daycare. What if I need to get away?
What if something happens and I need to get somewhere fast?
Right, I need to get home very quickly. And that's a challenge with transit, particularly transit like we have in Greater Columbus. That is not a New York or a very big city transit system where we don't have the frequency. So Chester's organization has Guaranteed Ride Home, which is a resource people can turn to that will get them to where they need to go.
What's
in
that,
an emergency.
Chester?
It's part of our Ride Solutions program for Central Ohio. We do a lot of different things, and we have a database where we connect folks up to carpool together. We've been working with a lot of school districts because, you know, our school districts are starting to cut back on bus service. So we've been working with connecting parents, being able to pick up and bring their kids to school and those sort of things. We also have a vanpool service. Matter of fact, one of the ones we just kicked off, a big service we just kicked off, is with OSU, where you're now going to be seeing vans that's operating for OSU staff and faculty with all kinds of logos, OSU and Morpsey stuff on there, that is about vanpooling. Again, this is about providing options. It's not an either-or conversation, Ann. It's not about we need to do – if we don't car, we got to get rid of all our cars and go to this. That's not the system, and that's what not Morpsey's arguing for. What we're saying is we've got to have transportation options, we've got to have choices, and we've got to make sure that we invest in an environment that allows for that. Part of that is doing things differently. It's providing opportunities for folks to go a lot of different ways, ride the bus, do bike. You can walk. My family and I, we live in Grove City, and we live in a neighborhood across from the high school. On Friday nights, we go to the game, and it's about a mile and a half, 2 mile walk. We walk to the game. We don't drive. We walk to the game. It's about just thinking. It's changing the paradigm a little bit. But also, to be able to change the paradigm, if all we do is invest in one mode of transportation, then we are going to be subjected to whatever happens in that mode of transportation. So if gas gets to $4, $4.50, or $5 a gallon, we don't have a choice. It doesn't matter to us. We are going to be subjected to that. That's when we have to invest in these other modes because it allows for the choices. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, I believe it's about economic competitiveness. And as long as we keep that in mind, then we understand what we need to do.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeff Stevens, did you want to
say? Yeah, I'll jump all over that. We have... It's kind of funny. We say we're not anti-car green zealots. We've actually, I think, provided a lot of positive reinforcement and encouragement for people to try cycling just through our name, Consider Biking. And, you know, we have this 2x2012 program that we've been working on the last year, where we've gone to all the business leaders, major business leaders, and have over 100 that have signed our pledge and basically given permission for their people to consider biking. And we only ask for try it 2 days per month. You know, everybody has a report day or whatever. And to get back to that initial comment you had, so many people have perceived barriers. And I think back to my situation. I was 10 years ago, I was working out in the Hilliard area. And my little daughter came along, and my wife and I worried about, oh my God, you know, we can't both ride our bike, or we might have to go get her. And come on, you know, you work with people that if an emergency comes up, they're probably going to lend you their card or, you know, rush to daycare or something. So, you know, a lot of times if you just work, with this thing, you know, in a reasonable manner, you will be able to work through some of those perceived obstacles. And, you know, what we are doing is saying, hey, just give it a try. Give it a try. And it's palatable. We're not saying, you know, jamming this down your throat, saying you got to be car free all the time. You know, just give it a go. And, you know, I arrange sometimes, you know, because I drop my kid off at school, walk her to school in the mm-hmm. morning, sometimes I drive downtown with the bike in the back, and then I run all my meetings by bike. So, you know, it's multimodal. You can put your bike on the bus and then ride or walk that last mile or whatever. So, and we see lots of people doing that, and that's a wonderful service.
How many of the buses are rigged to do that now, Marty? All of them? Or?
All of our fixed route buses. They can hold two bikes per coach. We've had plenty of times where people said, I wish you could put four or five bikes on the front of a bus.
It's just two per?
It's two per bus. Now, if the coach operator believes that it's safe for a bus to for a bike to board the coach, we could put a bike inside, but that's up to the operator's
discretion. Down in the back where there's a little more?
They could move it to the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. Depends on how much room the operator thinks there is to operate the coach safely. But as Jeff and both Chester are talking about, there is sometimes resistance to the lifestyle changes that come with getting away from our car. We have been driving cars since we were teenagers, many of us, if not most of us. And it's different when you are not driving your car. There are time considerations. But at the same time, there are advantages. On my bus ride in every morning and home every evening, there's everyone reading books and listening to their iPods or surfing around on their mobile phones. And so
they can do that because they're not driving.
They're not driving. Right. They're not worried about the traffic around them. They're not worried about
how much
traffic.
We hope they're not
driving.
The ones
that are, this is the not ones the that are bus driving. Driver. Everybody but the bus driver.
But these are all lifestyle changes that we adapt to, we get used to. And many people, again, once they try transit out, they try this different way of getting around, find that they have more time to read the paper in the morning, look at a book.
We've also gotten conditioned to be separated from each other mm-hmm. and to have that privacy. And a lot of people are turned off by when you're on the bus and mass transit, is by that closeness factor. They just don't want to rub elbows. It makes them uncomfortable. What's it like in a bus, Marty?
Well, hopefully, if our buses are loaded full, you may be sitting next to somebody. We oftentimes will speak with customers on our coaches who ride our express service, and they tell us that the buses are full. And we'll ride that line, and we'll find out that there are a couple of empty seats here and there. But a lot of people figure that if they're sitting in that two-seat area, that's a full seat, but there's room for two there. But it is different. When you're driving alone in your car, it's your car. You pick the radio station. You're in control of that vehicle. When you're riding transit, you're not driving. You're sharing that ride with people, some of whom you may know because you've been riding the bus a long time. Some of them you don't. But that's all part of living in a city, living in a community. It's the different people that we interact with every day.
And also, and one of the big benefits here is the cost savings. I mean, it's just as all of us look at our home budgets, just like we're talking about the federal budget, the state budget, we're all looking at our home budget. We know many, many folks, their hours have been cut back. In some cases, they're underemployed. In some cases, they're not even working at all. You know, there were a two-income family, now they're a one-income family. This is a great way to think about how do I continue to have the quality of life I want, continue to be able to provide for my family, but at the same time, be able to have huge cost savings. And this is one of those areas where we can do that.
Jack in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're moving to Atlanta?
I'm getting ready to, actually. I've been in Columbus for about 6 years now, and I'm just really tired of having to drive everywhere. And there's, of course, other considerations, but after spending time in Chicago and Atlanta, I've decided to go ahead and make the move and get into a bigger city with a real public transit system.
What's the real public transit system to you? What does that look like?
Well, Atlanta has MARTA, and they have quite an extensive rail system. And while it's not quite as good as Chicago's, it certainly beats trying to catch buses in Columbus and having to deal with the people that ride buses late at night when I'm out and around.
Okay. Well, Jack, don't leave. But thanks for listening.
No problem.
Take care, and thanks for your call. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. It is car-free day tomorrow. How are you going to celebrate? Will you celebrate? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a question about COTA, just a possible pricing structure thing. I own a car and I live kind of out in the suburbs, so it would be almost impossible for me to completely give up on a car. So given that I have to maintain the car and pay for it and everything, I also can't afford to buy a monthly bus pass and own my car. So I was wondering if there might be a possibility of a pricing structure where if you could show you own a car and everything and normally drive it, if you could get a reduced rate monthly bus pass, just as a recognition that you're probably not going to use it as often, but you can now use it when you need it.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that thought before.
It could come across sounding like a benefit to people who can own a car, so I don't want it to sound like that. It's really just a recognition that we're trying to get people using the bus, so this is a recognition you're not going to use the bus as much, so you don't have to pay as much.
Pricing,
so I just wanted to throw that out there.
Pricing our services is challenging because we are already very heavily subsidized. The taxpayers of Franklin County contribute, vis-a-vis the sales and use tax, the vast majority of our funding. And so what we do is we ask our customers to pay about 18%, we'd like to get toward 20% of the cost of providing that ride. And so we believe that since we're already heavily subsidized, that a fair contribution from our customers is not too much to ask. I would bet that the cost of a monthly pass, whether it be an express or a local pass, would easily be higher than what you pay to drive your car every day or just fill up your tank. One of the great things—
You mean less than?
It would cost less be purchasing a pass every month.
Yeah.
One of the things I like to talk about when I'm speaking with people who don't use transit is that I put gas in my car maybe once every 3 weeks, once a month, because I'm using transit to get to and from work every day. And with the price, even today, it may not be $4. It's a lot of money you can save.
Jim, thanks for that call. Chester, did you want to say something?
Yeah, also, you know, one of the things about that is, and Jeff has really been at the forefront of this, is getting our employer community to help step up to the table and provide incentives. And provide incentives to help subsidize, if you will, their employees taking mass transit. This is going to be a big issue, particularly when we start the work on 70-71.
A new kind of benefit.
70-71 split. You know, as we think the congestion is going to happen out there, it's going to be critically important, particularly for the downtown employers, to really give that serious consideration. We have a number that already do it today. Franklin County Board of Commissioners, we have others. AEP's involved in that. We do some of that. Brooke and Eckler really at the forefront of that. We're going to recognize some of those companies today at lunch for some of their work. But it is about thinking about, you know, what is the benefit I can give my employees to be able to commute to work in a different kind of way. That saves me cost on parking garages. That saves me cost on healthcare issues and quality of life issues. So it's a great way to think about it.
But you also have to change your attitudes about what people wear to work. These things we have going on, these other traditions we have with work, lugging a big briefcase around.
That's a cultural change issue.
Yeah, exactly.
And times are changing. We look at, you know, us sitting here in the room and think back what the workplace looked like 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and now it's much more casual, and it's evolving.
But that's something you can do. You know, think about it for a second. You know, I worked in D.C. for 5 years. I commuted the entire 5 years I was there. As we thought about that, be a bus or be it the metro system. I mean, and I had never done that before. I'd lived in Atlanta for 6 years. The gentleman was talking about Atlanta. I lived in Atlanta for 6 years. I took MARTA from time to time. It's very different. The transportation system in Atlanta is a big issue. I mean, it's a big problem. We're very fortunate here in that we can get around our region. We're extremely fortunate here.
By car.
By car. But if we want to continue to be able to do that in the future, we're getting ready to work on a 70-71 split. $1.8 billion to fix that split issue is getting a lot more expensive, not less. We better invest in tomorrow or we're going to have serious issues.
Jonathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. You're going to ride your bike?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I think tomorrow, I think I'll just go out and ride my bike and see who's out. A co-founder at Franklinton Cycle Works, and we're really about just kind of being part of the bicycle community and getting people on bikes and kind of fighting the stigma that, you know, if you're on a bike, it's because you can't afford a car or, you know, something to that effect. So I think what we'll be doing at Franklinton Cycle Works is just going out and riding and waving at people and seeing how many people actually come out and ride, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. I really love the cycling community in Columbus. It's very, I feel like, very, very strong.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take care. Have a great day tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the weather's okay. Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ann.
Oh, hello, Ann. Didn't know I was on. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been cycling for over 20 years. And most of my cycling has been done outside of Franklin County, like up in Delaware County. And for the last, I've been doing that for 20 years. The last 3 years, I have attempted to ride my bike to work, which I've had pretty good experiences. But there's been a few times when I'm going up Cleveland Avenue to downtown, there are people that, in motorists, I should say, they come after you, they yell things at you, they tell you to get off the road, to get on the sidewalk. They scream profanity, and I was riding up to June, and I had one car come at me a couple of times, and so I've just have been scared off the road, literally. And I wonder if there's any other cyclists that have had the same problem in the city of Columbus, and I think there should be a message put out there that cyclists have the right to ride on the road just like cars, but we're treated like we're not supposed to be on the road.
Yeah, Jeff Stevens?
And we, you know, I hear that for an hour of every week, and we certainly, it is a challenge, and of course I also hear for an hour every week, you know, you guys need to obey the rules of the road, not run the red lights, et cetera. So, you know, we're sort of stuck in the middle, but we know for a fact, if we put more cyclists on the roads become safer for all users. That was just played out in New York City. They put in 250 miles of bike lanes in the last few years. Their cycling numbers doubled, and crashes for all vehicles, all users, motor vehicles down, was reduced. So that's why we're pushing for infrastructure on the roads, because we know it makes it safer for all. And, you know, another thing, I was talking with my friend Robert at OSU this morning and talking about a sidewalk crash that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough for people to believe this, but cycling on the road is the safest place to be. And, you know, we've got the facts to back that up. And being hit from behind, the thing that people fear the most, almost never, ever, ever happens. So if we get more people out there, it's going to get better, and we need those bike lanes to make that happen. So,
Ann, thanks for that call. We have a bunch of emails. I'm trying to get to a few of them before we take a break. From Nora on Facebook. Sorry, not email. Actually, they're all Facebook almost. No, I am not going car-free, Nora writes. I would like to be able to bike to my job, but there just isn't a safe route I could take. And I just checked the bus route, and it would take me 1 hour, 15 minutes by bus for a car trip that takes less than 10 minutes. From Connie on Facebook, not going car-free. Living in Dublin and working in Gahanna, it would take 2 hours each way with the current level of bus service. Much as I wish I could take public transportation to work, it's just not practical. And, you know, we've talked about that suburb-to-suburb problem where the jobs are being created out in the suburbs, but there's no place way for one suburbanite to get to the other job in another suburb. So we can talk about that more when we return. Tomorrow is car-free day. Around the world. How are you celebrating? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News.
It's easy to renew your 89.7 NPR News membership. You can visit wosu.org/renew to make your contribution for another year. Your online renewal means less paperwork for 89.7 NPR News, and that means more of your donation supports the programs you enjoy. And while online, don't forget to set your membership to renew automatically. It's a quick, easy, and efficient way to show your support and can help reduce on-air fundraising. Visit wosu.org/renew for more information.
And thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, the history of medicine and advances in surgery with Dr. Lawrence Dorr, the author and inventor of new robotic surgical techniques. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11 on 89.7.
Support for 89.7 comes from COSAI, presenting NPR's Neil Conan as he hosts The Evolution of Religion, a panel discussion about the intersection of science and religion at COSAI on October 5th at 7 p.m. More at COSAI.org.
Be sure to go behind the scenes of our station with one of our e-newsletters. You can find out what our Classical 101 hosts are listening to or get the latest news from our newsroom. Just visit wosu.org/email to sign up. A chance of showers and thunderstorms today, a high of 74. A chance of rain tonight, a low of 57. And then partly sunny for Thursday and a high of 72. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about Car Free Day. It is tomorrow. It's being celebrated around the world. Are you celebrating it? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us on allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and talk to us from there. Diane on Facebook says she's not going car free. Sadly, no, I won't be able to participate. I live and work in the suburbs without bus service. I was riding my bike to yoga class, but it's too dark now to do that safely. I hear you, Diane. I have ridden my bike partway to work, but again, it's too dark in the morning. So doing this in September instead of a summer day doesn't work for me. Make this car free day earlier in the summer when there is more daylight. Interesting idea. Chester, we were talking during the break about the suburb-to-suburb problem with transportation and Marty and everything. And when you talked about that increase of 500,000 people over the next, was it 30 years? Where are they going to be moving to? Are they going to be moving to Lewis Center and Grove City, or are they going to be moving inside the Beltway? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you start looking at it, every 50 or 60 years, Ann, and there's a whole show we can do just on, I think, the growth and opportunity and the kind of the landscape of what's happening in Central Ohio. But as we think about every 50 or 60 years, we have these kind of significant changes that happen in our nation. I would argue that 2008 was kind of that 50 or 60 year kind
of timeline. Because of the gas prices?
Well, because of the economy, I think because of the implications. You know, we all wanted, the great American dream was to live 30 miles out with a two-car garage, mom and dad and 2.1 kids on a half-acre lot, a 2,200-square-foot home. That was kind of what we thought, that was the greatest deal. I would argue 2008 kind of reset our values in many ways, and we realized and understood that maybe that wasn't most the important thing. Maybe other things really were. And we begin to see in the marketplace, and the marketplace is going to drive this conversation, we begin to see in the marketplace that the city of Dublin is looking at their entire comprehensive plan and creating a downtown. They're not doing that because they're altruistic reasons. They're doing that because the business community is driving that conversation. And as we think about these town centers, these economic job centers, they're going to be created along the Beltway. And so we want to make sure our communities are livable, they're walkable, that we can live, work, play, and pray and go to school in our communities. We can provide access and we get opportunities. It's just not going to be sustainable economically or otherwise to be 30 miles out from where your job was, from where you go to school, from where you go to church, where you go to live and work and play. We're going to have to be reconnected. This goes back to the founding and through the history of our nation. It's only after World War II that we moved away from that. We're almost going back to our future, if you will, going back to our past in many ways. And so as the market's going to drive that, and we've understood that maybe the greatest value we have is that reconnecting, is connected to family, connected to job, mixed use. Maybe it's about being able to live upstairs, walk downstairs to a work and go around the corner to the cafe. Maybe that's the important. It's a downtown Liebman. Downtown Columbus or downtown Marysville or downtown Gahanna is about reconnecting. So part of that is we don't necessarily have transportation issues. We have land use issues. And so if we really address the land use issues, then we begin to be able to invest in a transportation system that meets the needs of our entire population.
Beth in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, I would agree to disagree that it's not just land use issues. It's also transportation issues. I'm house-sitting over in Upper Arlington for my parents, and they don't live in the Upper Arlington area that's close to Grandview. They live off of Lane and or Henderson and Reed Road, and they don't have – there's this one road where people go as a shortcut to the grocery store, and if they had made a lane just – one lane or two lanes on that road, it would slow the traffic down, and it would be a safe way for people to jog and ride their bikes. And the same thing was, I was on Olin Tangi and Broadway, and there was a cyclist there, and I was really scared for that person. I gave that person leeway, and I will give them, you know, the more room, but, you know, it just, sometimes in some of those places, and I've lived in big metropolitan areas, you know, I'll watch people go and ride their bikes on these major overpasses, and I'm thinking, you know, you're putting your life in your own hands. Critical, you know, I mean, I also lived in San Francisco, and at the end of the month, it was always critical mass, and all the cyclists would take over all of downtown San Francisco. So, you just kind of had to get out of their way. And the point was to show how many people are riding their bikes and to support the bike community. Mm-hmm. So those are some random thoughts.
Okay. Well, thank you, Beth. You held on for a long time, and I appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lance in Columbus, welcome to the show. Hi, Lance.
Yo, Lance. Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I always moved where my family could walk to everything. My children could walk to school. I could walk to work. That's my first suggestion. The second was when you can't do that, I had a folding bicycle I carried in the back of my car. I always parked my car several miles from where I worked and where I could park for free. And I took my bicycle out of the back and bicycled to work. That's my second suggestion.
All right. Matt, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
614-292-8513. And Scott in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hello, Ann. Fantastic show once again.
Thanks.
And these are certainly topics I like to hear that this conversation about. I'm an avid motorcyclist as well as an avid cyclist here in Columbus. And I think that this motorist versus cyclist animosity can be quelled if, and this is coming from a cyclist standpoint, that we as cyclists begin to obey all the traffic laws. And I see a lot of this animosity come about because, for instance, if, say, you pull up the light, you're on a bicycle, there's no traffic around, another car pulls up, they have a red light, and you move through the intersection, I think that spawns comment from the motorist. And you know, that begins to build up over time. And I don't think I'm blowing this out of proportion.
No, I think we've heard that complaint many times on the program.
Right. And so I think, you know, and cycling is a very empowering activity. And your endorphins are flowing and you get to light. You don't want to stop, of course. You want to proceed. But I think from a cyclist standpoint, if we start to obey all the laws, and I appreciate all the motors that give us leeway, that's appreciated. But if we start to really kind of concentrate on obeying those laws, and I've been out with a few cyclists lately that kind of keep me on my toes, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But I think if we start doing that, I think that animosity or is going to fade in time. Obviously, because I think more people are riding bicycles, That's just something that motorists are going to have to get used to. But we need to obey the laws, and then I think we'll see that fade.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you for listening.
Sure enough.
Amen, Scott.
Yeah, Jeff Stevens. I mean, that comes up every time we have a show on bicycling.
Sure.
And there's just a lot of angry, frustrated people out there. I was following a guy who was amazingly keeping up with the speed limit. It was 25 miles an hour, and he was keeping up with the speed limit. And I wondered, what's he going to do when we go to each one of these four-way stops in Worthington, where I live? He stopped at every single one of them. He was bound and determined. It wasn't Jeff. He was bound and determined to follow the rules, yeah. And he did.
We've actually, you know, asked for help from law enforcement to actually, you know, do some crackdowns on scofflaw cyclists. And I think it would go a long way to helping our culture within our, you know, we were just in Minneapolis this summer with a delegation of city leaders, and I didn't feel the tension on the road. And I looked around, and all the cyclists were obeying the traffic law. Now, that's a culture that, you know, we're not there yet, but, you know, hopefully we will get there. And we're doing our best to try and tell the cyclists to obey those rules.
Jody on Facebook, she has a question about biking. She says, how do we get bike riders to ride on the road, not the sidewalk? Well, not every community is – that's not the law in every community. That's one issue, is the communities differ.
Yeah, and it's kind of confusing because, you know, for instance, in Columbus, there is a law that children on – you know, the definition is by the size of the bicycle, can ride on the sidewalk. And, you know, we're trying to educate people and shout loudly that actually riding on the sidewalk is more dangerous in many cases than being out on the road. But people, you know, still have this perception that it's very dangerous on the road. How, you know, oh, my gosh, get out there and mix it up with traffic. So it's a tough sell. And I guess, you know, that's why we at Consider Biking are fighting very hard to get more infrastructure on the road, you know, more bike lanes. We're really pushing to get some bike lanes downtown and in our urban core. And it takes time and investment. And it's, you know, we're trying to tell our constituency, you know, be patient. It's coming. But it's tough. And once we get those lanes there, more people will get out and off the sidewalks.
I have three emails about COTA from Angel. She says, last week my car died, so I took a COTA bus for the first time to work. It was really convenient. My only issue may have been a user problem because I couldn't figure out how to get home. Otherwise, it was a real lifesaver. And then from Will, he writes, so many COTA routes are 9 to 5 only. When will COTA add more late evening routes to and from downtown so we can attend late concerts, events, say, until midnight? We live on the northwest side. And then from Charlotte, we can talk about Will's question, but we have an email from Charlotte. She supports COTA. She says, even if you ride COTA only once a week, you are reducing the wear, tear, and mileage on your car. That is something to consider in this economy. Yes, COTA does need to rethink routes and schedules to reduce travel times, but that will not happen until the citizens demand it and put their fares where their mouths are. So what about Will? I mean, what about those late night you know, I know you do the Buckeye games. Everybody knows you do the Buckeye games.
When we ride buses and talk to our customers, that's the number one and two complaint we hear. We need more frequency, and we'd love for you to operate later into the evening. We've got to have later service so that we can capture those second shift workers to get them to work and also get them home. Currently, we operate Line 21, which is our recent foray into the late night service on North and South High Street. It travels from Clintonville through the Ohio State campus area, the Short North downtown, and now into German Village in the Brewery District on Friday and Saturday nights. It's proven to be very, very popular, and we hope to expand that service, but we also need to look at service that isn't just entertainment and weekend focus to get people around. We need to grow our service later into the evening. We are on an expansion plan right now at COTA. We're adding 30,000 additional hours of service every year and working to build service later into the evening is part of that plan. It's not happening all that fast. It's a gradual growth, but I'm sure that we're going to get there with continued support from the community.
I only have time for one more call, and I want to tell folks we did not get to the, as promised, rundown of all the different events around town tomorrow, but you can go to carfreedaycolumbus.org, and they have a list of everything you need to know. There's restaurants and different businesses, and some people are taking over parking spots and all kinds of fun stuff. So carfreedaycolumbus.org if you want to get more information, and we'll post it on our website at WOSU.org. And Alex in Columbus, we're running out of time, but I wanted to hear your good story about Columbus Police.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I had an experience where I was coming home late at night from downtown, and I am very adamant about following traffic laws on my bike. And I had all my lights on, my helmet and everything, and I was in the right-hand lane on High Street, and a car pulled up behind me and started beeping their horn, and they were shouting at me, and the left lane was empty. They were being very aggressive. When they finally did pass me, I got the license plate number of the car and immediately called the police and gave them the license plate number. And by the next traffic light, a cop car pulled up next to me and said, "Hi, did you just call the cops?" And I said, "Yes, I did." They said, "You know, what did the person look like? What did the car look like?" And I gave them the information, and they immediately sped off. At the next traffic light, a gang of bike cops pulled up next to me and were like, "Did you call the cops?" I said, "Yes." And they also got my information and were like, "Okay, we're on it."
Miss Popularity.
And it was 2 a.m, and I felt so safe to know that they actually seemed to care about biker safety. And that was just a really, really good experience with the police. So, I mean, they're out there, and I think as long as bikers are following the traffic laws, the police are there to support you, and they don't want us to be hurt any more than anyone else.
Well, Alex, thanks for that happy story.
You're welcome.
And thanks for listening. Thanks to my guests today as well. Chester Jordan, he's Executive Director of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Thanks for coming in today, Chester.
Thank you, Ann, very much.
Also, Jeff Stevens, he's Executive Director of Consider Biking, Bike Advocacy Organization in Central Ohio. Jeff, thanks for being here today. And Marty Stutz, Vice President of Communications, Marketing, and Customer Service at COTA.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Thanks, Marty. And thanks for listening, everybody. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.